In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Why do we make music, and how do we make music with impact? From SDPB, today is Friday, August 9th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, The War and Treaty plays live in the SDPB studios. They are on stage at the Levitt in Sioux Falls tonight. You can stream it through SDPB online. But first, they are joining us for a conversation and an acoustic set. We'll talk about love, healing, service, and country music. But first, after the news, an update on anthrax and avian flu in South Dakota cattle herds. Our state veterinarian is with us. And a look at preparing for disaster as a small business owner, how to be ready for those things it feels you can't quite prepare for. We're broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. On August 7th, South Dakota had its first confirmed case of anthrax this year. The case was found in a beef herd in Meade County. Beth Thompson is South Dakota State Veterinarian and joins us now with an update. Dr. Thompson, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello. Good morning and good afternoon, I think. We're right at the noon hour here.
Yes. Tell us first about the recent discovery and how there's good news in the bad news based on how soon it was caught.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Anthrax is something that South Dakota deals with, I would say, almost on a yearly basis. I know cases back in 2023, 22, 21. The herd that we have affected right now is located in Meade County, approximately 60 pairs in the herd. The good news is this cattle herd had been vaccinated, so the one death that occurred was an unvaccinated calf. So between the herd vaccination, quick response by the rancher and veterinary oversight, I think we have limited the impact of anthrax in this herd greatly.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the proper handling of things if you do find a deceased animal.
Yeah, anthrax is one that our farmers and ranchers, I think, are well versed on. If you have unexpected death loss, and usually it occurs when the ground's been disturbed. If we're talking about flooding, if we're talking about maybe digging in some areas of a pasture, or in cases of drought, the animals get down nose to nose with or nose into that ground and pick up those spores. The spores are really dangerous once they're ingested into an animal. So to your question about dealing with the carcasses, we highly recommend at all possible that the carcasses be burned in an area where they're going to be buried. So a lot of times our farmers and ranchers will dig that hole for the carcasses and actually burn the carcasses within that hole.
So what do South Dakotans need to know, consumers need to know about this discovery and what happens next?
First of all, our beef supply remains absolutely safe. These animals, the one calf, of course, is going to be disposed of on site. And to the rest of the farmers and ranchers, this is a good example of how well the vaccine works. And we highly recommend, no matter where you're at in the state of South Dakota, that you use the vaccine, because the spores, these bacterial spores, can be hidden in the ground, in the pastures, for years, decades even. So always a good idea to work together with your veterinarian and get vaccine on board.
So the last time you and I talked, there was also avian flu found in a South Dakota cattle herd. Give us an update on that, if you will.
Sure. Avian influenza has still been affecting, and I'll talk in a moment about South Dakota, but states across the United States. Looking at the data this morning, there have been 40 cases of avian influenza in dairy herds in the last 30 days in six states. Throughout this outbreak, going back to more of the beginning of this year, there have been 190 total cases in dairies in 13 states. So in South Dakota, we've had two dairy herds affected in the last 30 days. And as a reminder to everybody, this isn't the devastating disease in dairy that we see in poultry. Everybody remember, in poultry, once the birds are infected, more than likely they're going to start dying with almost 100% mortality within the 48, 72 hours. Dairy is a different situation. These animals that are infected, their milk production goes down. They'll stop eating and drinking. They might have a fever. But generally speaking, they make their way through the infection in a couple, 3 weeks. Unfortunately, we continue to see dairies with avian influenza, and that is concerning, of course, to the dairying animals themselves. They don't feel well. They're not producing milk, but also for that cross-infectivity over into our commercial poultry flocks. So we're watching very closely. We at the Animal Industry Board work with our veterinarians, our farmers, our South Dakota dairy, South Dakota poultry groups, and, of course, with our lab here in the state when we're dealing with diseases like this.
How about infecting farm workers? Is that on the table? How do you prevent that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've seen, in Colorado, they've had well over 50 cases of influenza in dairy, and they've also seen some cases in their large lay facilities, poultry facilities, and have picked up cases in their workers. So we work very closely with the Department of Health, of course, but also with our extension folks. People might not realize, but South Dakota is one of those fortunate states that we have veterinarians that sit in the Department of Health, and then we also have a public health veterinarian sitting in Extension. Very important when we're having these concerns that cross species lines, especially into human health.
Yeah. Anything else that you want to leave us with from a perspective of the work that you're doing across the state and the work those vets are doing across the state?
Yeah, we really appreciate the work that our private veterinarians do. I should point out our state fair is coming up soon, and yeah. Looking forward to 4-H and FFA and all those open class animals coming into the state fair. Again, working with our human health partners, veterinarians, we want everybody to be healthy at the state fair, animals and people.
Yeah. Did you do any of that when you were growing up? Bring an animal to the state fair? Tell me a story.
I did not. I did not. I have brothers that certainly did, but yeah. I did not. I was at the fairs for other reasons.
So. All right. Dr. Beth Thompson, South Dakota State Veterinarian, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
After disaster, 25% of businesses keep their doors closed for good. That is according to FEMA. Now, the U.S. Small Business Administration has released a guide to help small businesses avoid becoming a statistic. It offers tips on how to be more resilient in the face of disasters like floods and tornadoes. And Bryson Patterson is Deputy District Director with the South Dakota District Office of the SBA. And he's with us in our Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls to dive into the guide with us. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Great. Thank you so much, Lori. It's great to be here. And it's after hearing your last segment about anthrax, I mean, it sort of highlights, you know, the kind of issues that businesses can face. Like, you never know, like, what's that next disaster going to be? So we came up with this guide from the SBA that the idea is, you know, to give small businesses the tools that large businesses have. You know, I've worked for big organizations most of my career, and they've got people who help do disaster planning. But when you're a small business owner, that's really on your shoulders to make that happen. And so this guide helps small businesses go through thinking about their business like in a systematic way and thinking about ways that, okay, how can we make our business more resilient and how can we plan for, you know, what might happen?
Yeah, if small business owners have so much to think about. Give your pitch for why it's worth spending some time going through a resource guide, you know, doing some inventory, doing some planning. Before we get into some of the highlights of what you can do, some things you might have control over in a world of things you don't have control over, how much will that pay off in the event that you have to apply some of it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think doing a little bit of forethought and foreplanning really can have some big results when the inevitable happens. And, you know, things do happen, like, you know, a disaster, it could be a wildfire, it could be a flood, it could be the incapacitation of a key employee or an owner. Like, and so thinking about, like, what are your systems, you know, what would happen if, you know, I'm the business owner and I couldn't come to work for a few weeks? Like, do I have my processes sort of lined out? Do I have somebody who could step in and help out in that event? And so the best thing about this guide is it really walks you through how to do that in a way that you can really have something to hand to somebody to do it, because it does happen. And those phone calls are there. It's difficult sometimes, right? When those businesses get knocked sideways and they don't have those key documents because they didn't make a copy and put them somewhere else.
Yeah. Let's talk about taking stock of inventory, processes, employee data, because, you know, cybersecurity, these kinds of disasters where things fail, you know, connectivity fails for several days at a time. What are some of the things that you need to do first to take stock of where you're at?
Absolutely. So, you know, identifying, you know, what are my key processes? What is it that I'm doing at this business? What are the key pieces of equipment, of inventory? And then how can I make sure that those things are safe in the event of a disaster? Or if I need to back them up, what do I do? But also, besides the stuff, what are the functions and what are the people? So one of the things that this guide has in it is a sample phone chain. So if your internet's knocked out, if you're normally contacting people via email, let's have a backup. Let's have a phone chain set up and give it to all the staff ahead of time. So if you do need to start making phone calls, you can do that. Identifying your key suppliers, like, you know, who do we really depend on to provide the things that we need to make this business go? Understanding what they are, how to contact them, and having some backups for that too.
Yeah, and that might all be in your head.
Right, exactly.
And or in your phone.
Yes, right. And if your phone doesn't work and it doesn't turn on, what are you going to do? Yeah. So creating some systems where you've got those things backed up. And, you know, you mentioned cyber attacks.
Yeah.
Small businesses are often victims of cyber attacks. And, you know, this can be really difficult, you know, if your system goes down or some hacker steals your data. Like, that, those are the sorts of things. And this book has a whole section on little things that you can do, using firewalls, setting up a Wi-Fi password that protects your network. So just simple things. And I think that's one of my favorite things about this book is, like, when you get into it, there's actual, like, worksheets that you can do and specific suggestions.
Yeah. You're going to identify some vulnerabilities. How do you prioritize which one of those things you really need to be taking care of first? I'm sure that's very unique to each business, but help give some guidance if, you know, for the person who calls and says, I have 10 different things that I have to do, and now I'm just kind of stuck. I'm going to throw this, you know, this plan on my desk, and I'm not going to look at it because it's painful.
Sure. No, I think that the first thing you do, so, like, and this thing is super easy to use, but, you know, check it out. Print it out. It's in this business resilience guide. You can find it at our website, sba.gov. And when you flip back into it, you'll see that there's a section where they talk about possible things that could go wrong, you know, possible weather events. So here's one that people in South Dakota will really latch onto. high winds, right?
Yes.
That could happen, right? And so if you walk through this and you're like, okay, well, you know, earthquakes, yeah, probably not, but maybe. But let's start with something that we know that we're going to encounter, you know, maybe even, you know, in the near future, high winds. And so you start with one thing. Hey, okay, so what are some options for high winds? And here in this guide, it's cool because it shows you, here's some low-cost options, like simple things you can do to make your facility more safe. And then it goes through, like, you know, more expensive things, like, okay, so build a safe room, right? Okay, well, safe room would be a little more expensive, but, you know, you could do that. So thinking about what is possible, most likely for the folks in the western part of the state, thinking about, you know, wildfires and those things, and then looking at these lists and saying, oh, what could we do to mitigate those most likely of possible disasters.
How much did the pandemic help people have awareness for the unexpected scars from the things that you couldn't control, and maybe the business that you lost? Maybe you're in business again after the pandemic and you're coming back in and again and carrying some of those memories, but also the opportunity to plan in a way.
Yeah, it was funny looking at this resource guide, the resilience guide here. I was struck that, yes, we've got a pandemic section. 6 years ago, we certainly wouldn't have had a pandemic section. You know, that's not something that people anticipated. But now we know more. Now we're like, okay, so that's an eventuality that's in the front of our mind. And really, coming out of a disaster, that's a really good time to plan for the disaster. It's kind of fresh in your mind. Mm-hmm. The things have recently happened. You remember the pain points that you were facing. Now's the time to take stock to, like, okay, let's put this plan in place so that we've got it ready for the next event. And you can never know what the next event's going to be. You know, you can take a guess. But no, having that recent experience is a really good time to really think about, hey, let's get this plan put together.
To that end, how did you put together this guide? Was it with input from people who had been through things and said, I wish I had done that? Was it at, you know, insurance company data? Or how did you assemble the guide to figure out that it would be useful and effective?
Absolutely. Great question. So our Office of Disaster Assistance worked with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the insurance associations. And the insurance associations have seen a lot of claims, a lot of things have happened to people. And so they were able to provide that experience, that knowledge, to put that into this resource guide. And, you know, one of the things, there's a chapter on finance. Yeah. And so taking stock of what is your financial situation for your business? Do I have the appropriate insurance levels? Like, and what are some insurances that maybe you didn't think about, like business interruption insurance? Like, that's one that could be really valuable for people, you know, in the event that they needed it.
Yeah. Bryson Patterson. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. There's a lot going on in our studio right now, right over your shoulder, because the War and Treaty is going to play and the band just kind of walked out into the studio space. So you get like public radio bonus points for the calmness of your voice. This is a man who can handle a disruption,
<It's exciting. laughs>
a distraction, and probably a disaster. We're one to come. So we're going to put links up to the SBA Business Resilience Guide on our website as well, and we'll talk to you again in the future.
Thank you so much, Lori. Really appreciate it.
To In the Moment on SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh, and we are broadcasting now from SDPB's Leo P. Flynn Gallery in our Sioux Falls studios. And the War and Treaty is in town for Levitt at the Falls tonight. It is going to be a big, beautiful audience, and I think beautiful weather. I cannot tell you how excited people are once the announcement came that you were coming. So we said to a few friends, and then we packed the gallery here in the studio here for this acoustic set as well. So thank you to the audience for showing up and sharing the love. Michael Trotter, Tanya, and Max Brown, all here in the studio. They're going to play for us in a little bit. But first, welcome to South Dakota. Have you been here before?
We have.
You have.
Yes. This summer, opening up for Chris Stapleton.
Nice. Of course.
Summer, right?
Yes,
yeah.
I think
it's
so.
August 20th, so yeah, we're here coming.
All right. And you were kind enough to come in off of the travel and some airline disruptions, and you've made it here. That's just life on the road for you?
Super excited to be here. Like, heck yeah. Of course. Anytime we get to be on radio is awesome.
You have done so much at award shows, on the radio, in interviews, telling people about your music, telling people about your story, and the love story between the two of you, that I was thinking about it all last night and really haven't even slept. So the power of what you're doing is so impactful. And so if you don't know, let's start with a little bit of the love story, because your music is about love, but
we
you're
have
getting
to
know.
You're about to get the real now. You're going to sleep just fine tonight. You're going to sleep for 3 days after this.
It's pretty special. I mean, we really, in our own personal lives, we've really grown together. And I think it's from us just having the hard conversations and really just being really honest with each other and growing into letting each other grow into whatever that looks like and being there for each other,
don't
you know?
I
hit him, so.
And we don't speak for each other. She's
That's
speaking
right.
for herself.
I'm speaking for myself.
I have a whole different idea
yeah.
of this.
Yeah, he does.
Share
I mean, that's the war and treaty, though. You know,
yeah,
that's the
war and
treaty.
She's going to make it professional and clean.
No.
I'm going to make it honest and really messed up. So I have no say-so in this relationship, period.
Oh, he's right.
I show out in public because I know that she can't do what she does to me at home in public. So I'm not afraid this morning. Now, when we leave, I will be afraid again.
Yeah. That's not true. That is it. We have witnesses that's not true.
Tell me how much you learn about each other through just living, going through life together, traveling together, getting somewhere together. And how much do you learn about each other while you're singing together, as you have learned to hear your voices meld for the first time, to find that harmony, to have other people say, are you listening to this? Because this is special. How much of that came, that intimacy came through music?
Well, I learned that, remember, I'm in
ladies
control.
First.
I'm in control. Remember, you told this audience yeah. that I've run the show, right?
I don't even know if we're allowed to correctly say ladies first nowadays, yeah. but you first.
Well, you know, I think I learned that I'm a lazy singer when I sing on stage with Michael. So I've learned to just step it up. You know, I was a solo artist for a long time. I love music, but to meet someone who loves it 15 times more than you, it's like 20. Insane, you know, and this is all day. So I'm washing dishes. He's writing 10 songs. I'm outside doing stuff. He's writing another 10 songs. He's a prolific songwriter, and he's always in that mode. And it changes when you're married and you have kids. And so we've kind of learned the balance of what that looks like. And it's amazing to watch him. I mean, yeah. we were in the studio just yesterday, last night, and to watch his magic work. You know, when it clicks on to, you know, and everyone that works with us sees it, you know, it's, and he doesn't like me saying that, but I've never met anybody like him.
I am not a prolific songwriter. John Prine is a prolific. Jason Isbell are prolific.
You are a prolific songwriter.
I am a guy who just likes to tell a truth in songs. But what I have learned, okay, am I allowed to say what I've learned now? Okay. What I've learned is, oh, okay, well. I have learned that it takes a certain amount of patience to be in a duo. That if you are willing to learn that patience, you will have almost close to perfect relationships in your life. Because the greatest thing you can ever do in life is to share life with someone. Mm-hmm. It's truly powerful. So the patience that I'm talking about is I'm from the military. I like to be on time. I like to have everything, you know, A, B, C, and D. Tanya likes capital A, lowercase a, capital B, lowercase B. You know, she likes all those things.
Yeah.
And the patience that it requires is two-way. So I have to be patient with her in knowing that we're going to be late. Like, it is not going to work out to where it's going to be on your timing. She has to be patient with, Michael's going to be irritated. because I'm late.
There is a plan of the day, and you have not followed it.
Yes. But when you start thinking of the bigger picture, it's like, okay, you're late, but you're safe. Okay, we're late, but we're still correct. We're late, but our purpose isn't deterred. No, and then you start to understand each other, and you start to have compassion for one another, and you start really getting more intimate with your partner and realizing that it's not as irritating anymore. It's like cute now, and it's funny now. It's like, you know what? Because you start to see the things that you didn't pay attention to. Okay, yes, you may be 5 minutes or 6 minutes or 7 or 8 or 10 or 15 or 30 or 45 or an hour late.
This is going.
But she woke up 2 hours early to try to be on time.
Yeah, I try really hard. It's just can't.
You had to do a lot of work to get to the point where you could accept, and therefore.
Oh, I'm lying. I have not accepted.
No, he hasn't.
She's always late.
I was waiting. I was like, the violin was playing in my head. I'm like, this isn't real. Where is this going? No, our kids, our daughter calls me Tick, Tick, Boom. She just calls him Boom. That explains it all.
You understand.
I did. I was going to live, but you get to live with the butterfly.
Yeah, if you can do that. But my dad was like that. My dad served, and he was a cop for 25 years, and everything was so like this. So when I became an adult, I was like, no way.
That's done, yeah.
You're out of here, buddy. He's over there, and I'm over here. Yeah. And it's not fair to him. So I've gotten better. I'm not always late. Like, the word always is a little stretch. I am probably 70%, you know.
Notice how Alex and Max are not in this conversation.
We hit our live radio time post, though. So you're on time today to us.
Yes.
Because
look at that.
We started on time. And let's do some music.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what you want to sing for us, perform first, as Max comes up and gets ready with us.
His first song is entitled Yesterday's Burn. And we like to sing it. And the song is literally about showing compassion and getting involved in someone's pain and letting them know that, you know, whatever it is that's bothering you, at least by tomorrow you won't feel it. You know, if you let love in, if you let, you know, if you let me do my job.
Let the love in. The War and Treaty.
Max Brown,
thank
folks.
You.
All right, Max, let's do it. Honey, I know there's a bucket of tears left to cry. And anyone can see that they're stuck in the ducts of your eyes. Is your heart broken, aching from last night's pain? Well, baby, who done it? I wanna know the Joe's name.
Tell me what's wrong. Who hurt you, baby? Lay in my arms, and I'll serenade. You until the sorrow is gone, never to return. Oh, well, at least by tomorrow you won't feel yesterday's burn. Sweetheart, I know there's a yell left to shout at the wall. And anyone can see that your voice can't let out that call. I am angry and bitter, downright upset at yourself for letting that man drag you all the way down to tell me what's wrong. Who hurt you, baby? Lay in my arms and I'll serenade. Is gone, never to return. Well, at least by tomorrow, you will feel yesterday's burn.
Right now.
In the Moment on SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh, and we are live in SDPB's Leo P. Flynn Gallery in our Sioux Falls studios. Tonight at the Levitt at the Falls, you can see this group, The War and Treaty. Tanya Trotter, Michael Trotter, Max Brown is with us as well, and they are going to take the stage. It's going to be a huge crowd. So we have this intimate acoustic precursor to that, and I'm just so grateful that you were willing to stop by for people across the state. So wherever you're at, you can stream tonight's Levitt performance at sdpb.org/music. But to be here for this is really generous of you, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
You have been through some difficult times together and before you met each other. Michael, you've talked openly about your PTSD, about playing memorial music on one of Saddam Hussein's pianos in a palace during one of your two tours in the Iraq War. And before the break, when we were talking, the way you talk about music and the intensity with which you are writing songs and writing songs and writing songs strikes me that work of memorialization is not done for you? Am I wrong? Am I right? Why do you make music today?
Wow. Well, thank you for that question. I'm really moved to always talk about my service to my country, and in this case, how I got into songwriting. Where I'm at today is the same place I was yesterday. And I have my mother to thank for that. You know, this is someone who I don't feel I ever give enough credit to. From a young age, I started singing at age 3. And my mom, I come from a strict Christian background. And my mom was like, "You sing for Jesus." And I was like, "Well, where is he? Because I would love to see what he thinks about this song," you know. But then my mother, as I got older, she would elaborate more. And we would do house calls to people who were sick and they couldn't come to church. They couldn't get out of their beds. I've sung for people who were dying of cancer. And I've heard them tell my mom and I can now die at peace. So when I got into the military, I was searching for that peace. I was searching for peace in the midst of war, literally. And, you know, our country, we fantasized war. You know, we've dramatized it and we've made movies out of it, and it's a big seller, and people really don't understand what you really go through in the war. And I'm talking about like this. One day you're sitting talking to your battle buddy, and the next day that battle buddy's not there. He's gone. He's been killed. When that happens, it messes with you, because it starts happening at a rapid pace, and you're like counting down the days when you're next. And if you're doing that, your battle buddies are doing that. So for me, I couldn't settle myself, and it took one more death of a captain who actually realized that I was jittery about being in Iraq, and he showed me that there was a piano. That Saddam Hussein had many pianos, but in this palace that we had took over, there was a black upright piano. And on my off time, I would go down there and try to teach myself to play songs, and it wasn't until that person was killed where I unlocked emotionally and started writing songs about how I felt about that scenario. And I asked to perform it at his memorial service that we made up out there. And if you've ever been to a military funeral, especially in the war, it's a really strange, really reflective, but it's eerie, because there's no casket. There's combat boots. There's a weapon that's hung upside down inside of the boot. There's dog tags draped around the weapon. And there's a Kevlar, or, you know, a helmet. And that's the remains. And you're just staring at the things that they issue us to protect us, and realize that that couldn't protect that soldier. And then the first sergeant stands up and he does a roll call, you know. And I'm glad to say this, because many Americans, they don't really know, you know, what takes place at a military funeral, especially in the war. But you're out in the open if you're in Iraq, and there's no truce, period. There's nobody, you know, you don't tell the enemy, "Hey, man, we're going to have a funeral for our guy right now, so don't fire a rocket or a bomb over here," you know. It's literally, you are in the open, and you're uncovering yourself for your battle buddy, who's no longer with us. And they do a roll call. It's like, "John," he's like, "Here, First Sergeant." It's like, "Derek, here, First Sergeant." "Sharon, here, First Sergeant." "Robert." "Robert Jackson." "Robert Darrell Jackson." And then he turns around, and it's out loud in the open, in the wilderness. It's big. And he says, Soldier Robert Jackson is no longer with us, sir. He's a good soldier. And then we're called to attention, and then the next sound you hear out in the distance is taps. But during this service, the next voice you heard was mine. Not sang the song I had written for my battle buddy, and it did something to my unit, 16th Infantry, 2nd Brigade, 1st Armored Division. Colonel Peter Jones at the time, he wanted to know if I wrote that song. I said I did. He said, how long did it take you to write it? I said, all but 5 minutes. And he said, all right, good. That's your new job. You're going to go to as many memorials as you can. You're going to learn about the fallen. You're going to have to write a song. And you're going to have to perform it. I did that. 95% of the guys I wrote about, or sometimes women, female medics in the infantry unit, I knew. And I wasn't processing. I was more so focused on the healing of my guys and gals who I was serving with versus my own. And I wouldn't get that healing until I got out of the military, and that's why the Warren Treaty is present. But I have learned how to make healing the main point in our music, the main focal point in our music, healing and unity, bridging us together, you know. And because it didn't matter in war, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, doesn't matter what side of the street or tracks you're on. What matters is the flag. What matters is our country, and what matters is humanity. You know, we're not just over there to fight. We're over there to represent the greatest points of our humanity, which is freedom. And I just think that my job and Tanya's job is to remind this country of that, the joys of freedom, and not so much the disrespects of freedom. So, yeah.
Thank you for going there with me for that, and for thank you for all the things that you get thanked for. Thank you for bringing us the music still.
Thank you.
Can you sing after that? Can you do one more for us?
Yes.
The War and Treaty.
Thank you. Thank you. This song right here is special to us because it's called Leads Me Home. And we all have a journey. We all have a walk in life. And our journey takes us different places. But one thing is for certain, that love will always call us back home. And that's what this song is about. Love leading us home. And we'd like to dedicate this song to everybody in this room. And thank you for having us. You sound so good, Max Brown. All those lessons I put you when you were 6 months old, it's paying off. Life's a journey about getting by till you get to the by and by and meet your maker up in the big house in the sky. As you travel to and fro, sometimes you get lost trying to go back to a familiar place that you once strayed away from. Oh, but meet me on the other side of the railroad, where the mountain beams, the crystal streams through the valleys flow. Woes in your arms, I find the straight and narrow on those country roads. You will always be the one that leads me home. Tanya, you're the one that leads me home.
I remember behind other side of the railroad, where the mountain meets the crystal streams, through the valleys flows. In your arms I'll find the straight and narrow on those country roads. Oh, you one that leads me home.
Oh. One that leads me home.
Ooh. Ooh.
Goodness.
Oh. Thank you.
The War and Treaty, sdpb.org/music. If you're not here by the Levitt tonight, if you are in driving distance, walking distance, cycling distance, you probably should get down there for this show. Mm-hmm. We got like a minute left. And Tanya, I wanted to ask you, there are a lot of people who are paying attention for the first time to Black voices in country music. Mm-hmm. What is your message to some people who maybe don't know the rich heritage and are now listening for the first time and wondering, what have I been missing out on?
I think it's important that we study everything about everything in this country. I was just saying this the other day that, you know, culturally we learn about this in school and you don't learn about that. But this is probably, I'm not going to say the only country, but I would say the top two countries where you have a lot of immigrants. My mother was an immigrant from Panama, so I had to learn about that culture. I had to learn about the music. There were things I didn't know that I had to learn. So I would say, just educate yourself. You know, if you like a song that you hear on the radio, we were driving, I can't remember where we were, but there was a guy who was from Africa, and he was listening to this French song in the car. He was an Uber driver. And so Michael said, who is that? Who's this artist? And he said, oh, he's from my country. I think he was Indian. He said, he's from my country. So I went and downloaded his music onto my Spotify to find out more about him. So I think it's important that we just study and we learn and we are open. As Michael talked about freedom, we're open to find out what this is all about and where it came from and just enjoy it. And people say things like, well, don't see color. Well, it's hard to say that because you can't see color. If I'm looking at you, I see color, you see color. I think what you do is you see the heart and you feel the humanity in the music.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I say see colors.
Yes, that's right.
See how colorful we all are.
That's right.
Look at us. We're beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah. All of us.
Mm-hmm. That is our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB to this great live audience who showed up really for a pop-up concert, we really appreciate you as well for making this special. Thanks for being here in this space with us and everyone listening whose lives were maybe just changed. And thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.